The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Baseball season is around the corner, and we will be giving out our favorite futures picks on the Just Baseball Show in the lead up to opening day. To go along with that, BetMGM has a brand new offer for our listeners. Use code JustBaseball and place your first BetMGM Sportsbook wager through the BetMGM Sportsbook app of at least $5, and you will receive $150 instantly in additional winnings regardless of your wager's outcome. How to get this offer? Step 1. Download the BetMGM Sports app on iOS or Android or visit BetMGM.com. Step 2. Sign up and deposit at least $5 into your newly created account. Step 3. Place a wager in the amount of at least $5 at standard odds price. Step 4. Once you have placed a bet, you will receive $150 in bonus bets regardless of the outcome of your wager. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369 in New York and call 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 21 plus only, please gamble responsibly. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, and 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use code JustBaseball and get $150 when you bet at least $5 on your first wager.
And Bonds hits it high. It's a deep.
College baseball is upon us. Tomorrow, you've got the college baseball season starting, and you've got a massive draft class of college baseball stars this year. The first round is going to be 20 to 25 college guys. I mean, it's as good as we've ever seen it. Jack, Peter, Just Baseball Show, as always, presented by BetMGM. Off the top, real quick, want to talk about a momentous hire in the broadcast space in baseball and kind of an arrival from hell for pitchers and catchers reporting to Orioles camp. But this was an amazing conversation with Peter Flaherty of Baseball America, Peter Apple.
No doubt about it. One of my favorite episodes that we do all year. My favorite personal episode is the win totals and futures conversation that we have much closer to the season. But my favorite guest, Pete Flaherty. I mean, the guy is an encyclopedia of college baseball. He gives us the full lowdown. We have over an hour with him that you'll hear on the back side of this podcast. And it is all brought to you by BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. Remember, folks, use code JustBaseball. We don't have the $5 to win $158 in bonus bets anymore because the Super Bowl is done. But we do have another offer, and it's almost as good. $5 gets you $150. So congratulations to all the people who took advantage early, but you still can by using code JustBaseball, putting down $5 on standard odds. And once the bet is settled, $150 will be loaded into your account. And just as importantly, Jack, we got to talk about the Orioles because this sucks.
So Jake Rill is the Orioles beat guy for MLB.com, and he reported on Thursday morning that Samuel Basayo showed up with a stress fracture. He will not catch until April. Gunnar Henderson aggravated his oblique. He is likely for opening day, but he's going to miss a good bit of spring training.
Still not good.
What?
I said still not good. Like, he might be ready for opening day, right, but that's like, that's an oblique thing
right now.
You're missing
some spring training. It's not great. John Means is a month behind. He might miss opening day. And then the one that kills everybody, Kyle Bradish, has a right UCL sprain. He will open the season on the injured list. Reminder that a sprain is a partial tear. So, interesting. And this year, after trading for Corbin Burnes, has gotten off on absolutely the wrong foot in Baltimore.
Two things. Number one, look at us. Right back to talking about these injuries. Damn it. I mean, they're our least favorite part of the show. And we're right back to it. Major League Baseball, injuries, all the freaking time. Just takes the wind out of the balloon. And the Orioles, right? You just trade for Corbin Burnes. Everything is looking so awesome. And now your ace before you got Corbin Burnes potentially will need Tommy John surgery. And the reason I say potentially, and what I think is probable, is he going to pitch through it? Orioles have to make a decision now about this, right? Because if he gets it now, he'll probably be ready before the All-Star break next season. If he pitches through this, let's say he gets it at the All-Star break, right? Let's say in July or something like that. Then he's going to miss all of next season. So that's the gamble here. Do you let him pitch through it? Do you say, hey, we need to get it to you now? I don't know. And now we're just playing the waiting game.
We are. It stinks that Bautista is out for the entirety of this year with his UCL tear. The plan is get a PRP injection and throw through it and pitch through it. There have been guys that have thrown for several years with a partial tear in their UCL. Has it happened often? No, not necessarily. More often than not, those guys are going under the knife. We are not doctors. We cannot pretend to be doctors. So we have no idea what the Orioles are going to do with Kyle Bradish. And we have no idea what is recommended by doctors. All we know is that we are not getting full speed, full health Kyle Bradish to pair with Grayson Rodriguez in year two and Corbin Burnes in a walk year. And I mean, Tyler Wells looked really good. Like,
and even John Means is a month behind on his.
Dude, like, we have now hit a point that the Orioles are going to run out Cole Irvin in the first week of the regular season.
Hey, don't forget about Dean Kramer. He's still all right.
Yeah, like, absolutely, but you need five.
It's true.
And as of right now,
it's an accurate thing to say.
It's Grayson, it's Kramer, it's Wells, and it's Cole Irvin.
That's actually not that bad. I know, like, it's
four are great.
I know, it's just Cole Irvin's going to be mid-year. Yeah.
Think about Wells being the five and not the four.
I mean, Tyler Wells is perfectly fine. So they have some reinforcements, but like Cole Irvin. And the thing is, Jack, they could make a trade for Dylan Cease right now and not even feel it.
They'd feel a Cease.
They'd feel it because it's Dylan Cease. But at the same time, why don't they just trade their fourth best outfield prospect?
Like, I mean, hell, man, they could go make a trade for Bieber and not feel it.
You see Bieber's up to 93 in bullpens.
Yeah.
My favorite analysis on the track, man, in a bullpen that I don't know where he's up to 93.
Bullpens.
I'm back in.
Sucker for the indoor bullpens. This obviously hampers the optimism that we had for Baltimore. It doesn't adjust how I feel about their win total. It doesn't adjust how I feel about their regular season aspirations. What it does alter is if this guy does go under the knife, I wonder if they have the frontline starting pitching to win the World Series. And after the Burnes deal, assuming full health when they get to October, I thought they did have the frontline ability to win the World Series.
Here's my worry. Last year, right, there's always one line out there on BetMGM that scares me. Last year, it was the Cardinals -110 to win the division. And we all thought to ourselves, what, you're telling there it's like a 52% chance? There's a way higher chance. Cardinals have to be a lock. How'd they do? Finishing last.
Yeah.
The Orioles win total line before this Bradish stuff was in the mid to high 80s. And you look at every projection system, they're right there as well. And anybody who watches baseball would tell you that's completely wrong. The Orioles are way better than that. Did you see them last year? And now they get full seasons from Gunner? Who knows? Maybe Jackson Holliday could contribute. They just got Corbin Burnes. And they're like fighting with the Blue Jays for second in the American League East, according to the odds.
Yep.
they are the one weird line this year. Now, it could, they could just win and win people money.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
very similarly to the Cardinals, I read up on the Orioles lines and I'm thinking to myself, they know something that we don't. And I don't know what it is.
They didn't know he had a partial tear.
No, they didn't. But the thing is, it hasn't changed since then. That was with Bradish in the fold.
Maybe they're asleep at the wheel. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah, that's what the books are known for. That's why Vegas is so shiny, is that they're asleep at the wheel.
What just happened there? Did you just spit on your camera?
Spit on my cam.
Yeah, that was crazy. I didn't realize what just happened, but that's awesome. Real quick before
I'm starting to drool. I'm so excited.
Real quick before we get to Pete Flaherty, Jenny Kavnar earlier this week was announced as the primary television play-by-play announcer for the Oakland A's. She is the first woman to be the primary TV announcer for a Major League Baseball team. It is awesome. It is overdue. Jenny was doing a lot of pre and post for the Rockies and was doing a lot of fill-in play-by-play on TV when Drew Goodman was out. Jenny is awesome, and I love the way she operates on a pitch-by-pitch basis. She knows the game so well. She's articulate. It seems easy to work with. Her and Dallas Braden are going to be the bright spot in Oakland this year. And her and Dallas Braden going to Vegas together. Dallas Braden in Vegas is going to be like the best thing ever. And I stand by that. But A-plus grand slam, slam dunk, whatever word you want to use, higher by the Oakland A's here getting Jenny.
Couldn't agree. I love that duo, right, with Braden, who, you know, makes baseball really fun and makes it really easy to understand. And especially his time, you know, in Major League Baseball, he can relate. And then Jenny, she's a savant with the numbers, and she definitely knows what she's talking about. So I really like that duo together. And I agree. It's, you know, the best part of watching A's games is hearing the booth, and the booth just got better.
Yeah, 100%. All right, college baseball, time to go.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
We have the perfect man for the job, and that job is the 2024 college baseball preview. Most people call you a genius when it comes to college baseball. The kids would call you the source. Me personally, I call you the plug. Pete Flaherty, before we begin, tons of questions, right? We got questions off the top, but we have your top eight teams that will make it to Omaha this season. The most important, how are you? How's your mental? You ready to go? You fresh?
I'm fantastic. I'm gearing up. I've taken a 2-day hiatus from my like Twitter weekly scouting my daily scouting reports on players, to get the batteries recharged. But I'm super fired up for tomorrow, and it's gonna be a sprint to the finish in June. It was so funny. Like mentally, I wasn't gonna say anything because I can't be the guy to like invite myself onto a show. I was checking my phone daily every time I get a text, being like, oh, I hope this is like Pete or Jack or Arm saying they want me on the Just Baseball show before the college season, because it's one, probably my favorite podcast to do, and two, without a doubt, my favorite show. So when you texted me, I think it was 2 days ago, I was so happy. It was like when I was like in eighth grade and waiting for a text back from like a girl, and I didn't get that text, but I got the Just Baseball show invite. So that's even better.
Well, we know that we are a massive part of your life, which is great. And you love us with a burning passion. So like, that's awesome that we can fulfill that need for you.
You're an asshole.
What does unplugging look like for you? Is it darkness retreat? Is it high school baseball, like indoor practices? What does unplugging look like?
My girlfriend's probably the best person to answer that one. But it's a lot of quality time with her. And then like, trying my best to it's like a massive itch I feel like I have to scratch, but literally just like relaxing and watching like the Celtics, who have been a wagon this year, but really just like spending time with her. I'm a huge simp, but I don't mind at all.
Are you team Drew Carter or what?
Oh, I love shout out Drudel25. I think that's still his Twitter handle. Ask him about his corgi. I love him.
Yeah, shout out Drew, man. He's
yeah, shout out Newhouse.
Shout out the orange.
Before we get into the top eight, I want to give you a softball question because I know Jack has some couple off the top just on general college baseball, you know, topics. Who's the best player in college baseball?
Oh man, that's a big time question because it's a little bit different than who's going to go 1-1 in the draft. You know what? He's been my guy for a while now, and I'm going to stick with it. It's not an easy answer with the talent there is in college baseball, but I'm going to stick with Travis Bazzana, second baseman out of Oregon State. I think for my money's worth, he's right there with JJ Weatherholt in terms of best hitters in the college game. Barrel sense is off the chart. He's an 80 makeup kid. I think he's a big leaguer through and through and an impact big leaguer at that. So I'm excited to watch him this year. And I know that once he gets into professional baseball, he's going to hit the ground running literally because he's a plus runner and he's got an outstanding baseball sense that he routinely flashes on the base paths. But he's my guy. He's my number one.
Okay. Second best pitcher in the country. I think.
Oh, second best. Yeah,
Is it consensus that Burns is the best pitcher in America or what?
Again, that's a really good question because you have obviously Chase Burns, Josh Hartle's right there. And then at least in terms of the draft boards, how they're shaking out, you kind of have this cluster maybe in the middle-ish late part of the first round that might be that next tier. But I'll go with kind of a non-vanilla take. I think Burns and Hartle are right now going to be the first two pitchers off the board. Brody Brecht is right there as well. But I'm going to take Jonathan Santucci out of Duke. I think he's really, really good. And I think that that was really eloquently said. I think he's really good. But 6'3 athletic left-hander, repeats his delivery really well. Like, it's a starter profile on the mound. He's got present arm speed, fastball up to 96 from the left side with big-time ride through the zone. And then he's got two plus secondary pitches in his slider and changeup that both got a ton of whiffs last year and had both allegedly taken a step forward this fall. So I'll take Santucci. I think he might be the more, like, a little bit more of an underrated answer because number one, I do think when all said and done is Burns, like you were saying, Pete and Jack, but I'll take Santucci, but Hartle's right there. Hagen Smith is right there. Brody Breck's right. There are a lot of arms that are in that conversation as well.
Yeah.
So the 1-1 conversation, because often, you know, the best player in college baseball doesn't get immediately drafted 1-1, right? Sometimes it's a high school player, but sometimes it's a college player with just a lot of talent that evaluators are really interested in. So who is going number one in the draft in your eyes right now? And why is it Nick Kurtz out of Wake Forest?
I like that. I guess we'll start with why Nick Kurtz would go number one. And I think that he is arguably the only player in the country with a borderline 70 hit. 65 isn't really a grade in my eyes. Like, it's a strong six, borderline seven hit tool, and then it's 70 raw power. And, like, I mean, he is a virtually impossible at bat for opposing pitchers because he's a huge kid at 6'5", 240 something. And, you know, usually with guys of that stature, at least at this stage in their career, their swing is a little long. Their levers are kind of out of sync. It looks like very gangly, like they'll show flashes, but the overall product, there's stuff to clean up, but it's very uniquely compact and explosive. His swing, and it's big time bat speed. He really snaps the barrel. I know that's like a teacher man buzzword, but like it, you watch him, like you swing and like he really does like snap and just uncork. And he's got an outstanding feel to hit. He drives the ball with authority to all fields. The approach is very advanced. And then I think the cherry on top is, it goes overlooked with first baseman, the defensive aspect of their game, I think, at least collegiately and in high school, because you don't at this stage typically have those like gold glove standout defenders. But Kurtz is comfortably a plus defender as well. He's super nimble around the bag, handles himself well. He's a total package. So I think that with what he's going to do this year, That's a very hard guy to pass up on, but I think right now, who is almost the consensus 1-1 guy a little bit, like separating himself a little bit, at least on the what I've seen, is West Virginia's JJ Weatherholt, and it's hard not to. Like, he led D1 with a 4.49 average last year, over 40 extra base hits, swiped 36 bags. For my money's worth, he's the best pure hitter in the country. Again, the feel for the barrel and barrel awareness is top of the scale for him. He drives the ball with authority to all fields, which I think is unique. Someone of his size, he's a little bit smaller in stature, but there's legit thump, not only just to the pull side, but I mean, when I saw him on the Cape, he was driving balls into the left center field gap over left fielder's heads. And that was just in the one game or two games I caught him. And he does a good job getting the ball up in the air. Approach is really advanced, and then the bat to ball skills are an 80 if you can stick a grade on them. It was a 90% overall contact rate, 94% in zone contact rate. The bat speed is ridiculous. The barrel really accelerates to the hitting zone, and he's a plus runner, and he makes opposing defenses feel him on a routine on a regular basis. And I think that the cherry on top with him is he's an outstanding makeup kid. He started the summer on the Cape, went to USA, then he came back to the Cape, which is super rare. And then what's kind of separated him in that 1-1 conversation right now, and it has him separated by a very small margin. I don't think it at all takes away from the volatility at the top of the board. But it's that he's going to be West Virginia's everyday shortstop. He apparently showed pretty well there this fall. And if teams are convinced on the ability for him to stick it short, like, that is a very impossible, really, not even teams. If the Guardians are convinced on his ability to stick it shortstop, that is going to be a very hard person to pass up on. So, I think he'd be 1-1 right now, but I think a lot could change as we go through the spring.
They've got enough guys in that organization that are like shortstops, but are probably going to make the move to second base. So they don't need to add another one of those guys, I'm sure. I've got a couple like bigger picture questions for you before we get into the team by team thing on the opening day of college baseball. I'm curious how you see it as somebody that is very enveloped and knows all of these guys and gets to know them between springs, gets to know them like when they may be making a decision to transfer. Working in college athletics at the outset of the transfer portal boom was crazy to me, especially at like the mid-major level when you get to college basketball, college football. I totally understand leveling up. Right. I understand like an Adam Tellier who just transferred from Ball State to Wake Forest, right? Or even a Seaver King who just went from Wingate to Wake. But it's the ones like Braden Montgomery who goes from Stanford to A&M, or hell, even a Chase Burns who was going to be the Friday guy at Tennessee and he goes to Wake Forest. Why are the high major to high major transfers happening in college baseball? Is it an NIL thing? Is it, hey, let's surround ourselves with Lions thing? It feels very unique to this particular sport.
Yeah, and I think there are a lot of factors at play, and I think that what you asked is what head coaches at major programs and in college baseball are trying to figure out themselves, because a lot of them, logically, at least looking at it from where I sit and where you guys sit, it might not make total sense. It's kind of a seemingly lateral move, if that. And I think that there are a lot of factors at play. NIL is certainly one of them. I don't think that's the reason for someone like a Braden Montgomery transferring or even some of these other guys, but I think that is 1,000% a factor. I think you'd be naive if you don't think that. And then I think another big one is maximizing your draft stock, being in a position where you know every day you're going to be, or every week you're going to be the Friday guy, or you're going to be the guy in center field or wherever it might be. I think maximizing your own personal stock and then putting yourself in a position to win a national championship, which is I think, which hopefully is probably the number one goal of all these guys. So I think that it's a very long-winded, complex answer that I think everyone's trying to figure out as we kind of go here, because there, like you said, there isn't a really I think clear reason for some of these guys transferring.
Right. My other thing is like it feels like, especially over the last couple of years, college baseball has become more concentrated, which makes Omaha way more enjoyable, right? Because you got a bunch of titans going head to head, and you got Louder against Skeens, and it's game of the decade in college baseball. But it also leaves some of the previous powers behind. Like I'm looking at top 25s, and I don't see USC, I don't see Louisville, I don't see Miami. Like, where are those programs going? Like, is there a world where we see once powers and the Mike Martin-led Seminoles and the Augie Garrido-led Longhorns, like those programs may just fall out of the top 25 if they're not keeping up with the new age?
I think there's a little bit of a changing of the guard, at least up at the top. It's hard not to say there is. I don't think that programs like you mentioned, Louisville, Miami, Florida State just missed the tournament last year for the first time, and it's a record-setting number of years
It
with
was
40
40
something
something. Like
years.
it was year five under Martin, and then he like never missed it again.
An unbelievable streak that was snapped. So I think that while those three teams have been down in recent memory, at least Florida State and Louisville, especially. Louisville has missed the tournament in two of the last 3 years. Florida State missed it just once last year. For what it's worth, I think they're a dark horse to make a really deep run
Gotcha.
this year. But Miami is consistently in a regional, a super regional. But I think up at the top there is a little bit of a changing of the guard. But those three programs are certainly still very well respected nationally. No one is, I think, taking them lightly. They still have the pull to get really, really high quality recruiting classes and high quality transfers. But it's going to be interesting to see how it unfolds in the next few years for sure.
So these are Pete Flaherty's eight teams that he thinks are going to go to Omaha this year. A reminder, Pete Flaherty from Baseball America. You can follow him on Twitter. His link is in the episode description, whether you're watching on YouTube or on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, wherever you're listening. Just hit the subscribe button. Look how great Pete is. Or leave a five-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Pete, let's start with number eight.
Oh man. Oh, are we going in descending order from eight down to the one seed?
We'll go however you want. We could start with one and go to eight, because I remember you said pre-record that you still aren't totally sure on your eight because there are so many great teams in college baseball this year. So why don't we start off at one? Who is that one team that you just locked in from the very beginning, thinking to yourself, yeah, these are the guys to beat?
I was going to say I think I've got my eighth overall seed, but to your point, we pre-recording, like I have like six of my Omaha eight. I'm still kind of tinkering with them. I'll start with one and go with Wake Forest. I think that they're in a really, really good spot to get back to Omaha. I think it do you want me to should I go in depth right now or should we run through them and then talk them through?
I say just go give us the elevator pitch on both teams, and we'll ask some questions about each, and then we'll just keep it moving.
Gotcha. With Wake, I mean, it starts with the rotation. They've got that three-headed monster and they're billing it as such, and rightfully so, of Chase Burns, Josh Hartle, and Michael Massey. It's one of, if not the best rotations in college baseball. Then you flip to the other side of the baseball and there's no shortage of talent there with Siver King and Nick Kurtz. I think Ball State transfer. Adam Tellier is going to be a real X factor in that offense. Jack, I know you're really familiar with watching him play, but to me, he's a wiry athlete. You can stick him all over the field and feel pretty comfortable that he'll play quality defense wherever he is, especially at third base. He's athletic enough where you can throw him out in center field and he holds his own. And he's got some impact at the plate. And then otherwise, offensively, you have a handful of transfers with Tate Ballesteros. Merrick Houston, I think, is someone that is going to take a massive step forward from an offensive standpoint. Last year, you saw his plus defense at shortstop on display, on a game-to-game basis. He is one of the best defenders in the country. He's a pro-level shortstop through and through. I think if he takes a step forward offensively, it'll just make that lineup that much longer and that much more dangerous. And they've got a Wofford transfer, Cameron Gill. They are just littered with talent on both sides of the baseball. I think when peeling back the layers with the Deeks a little bit, I am curious to see what that bullpen looks like. They lost a lot of firepower from last year, namely Cam Anasi, who was drafted in the sixth round by the Angels. And Cole Roland was set to step into that role, and he was going to be a fantastic option. But it was unfortunately announced, I think, a couple weeks ago that he'd be out until mid-April. So that's another big hole that I'm curious to see how that shakes out. But David Falco, a Maryland transfer, is someone who I think is going to be the guy in the back end of the bullpen. And they have a couple of talented freshman arms in Hayden LaFeu and Blake Morningstar, who, whether one of them is used in a midweek role and one of them's used in kind of out of the bullpen to start, it's TBD. But there's talent everywhere. And I know that Coach Walter has preached this, and this has been the team's mindset as well. They don't want last year to kind of be an anomaly year where Wake snapped this crazy Omaha streak. They made it for the first time since 1955, I think it was, and then they were never to be really heard from again. Like they want that to kind of be the standard. So they're by no means satisfied with what they did last year. And they not only want to get back to Omaha, but they want to be the team dogpiling on the mound at the end.
Yeah, losing Brock Wilkin or, Teddy McGraw as well. Those are some tough losses. Last year, LSU with Paul Skeens and Dylan Cruz, they were kind of viewed as that juggernaut, right? Just there was just some prohibitive favorite. They don't always win, but of course, that Tommy White home run certainly helped in the end. I'm curious, do you view Wake Forest as a similar juggernaut to LSU? Like it's Wake Forest and kind of everybody else? Or do you view Wake Forest as just the top team in college baseball, and then there are others that can fight with them?
It's a great question because I think last year, this was a lot of people's mindsets, and I'm happy that I correctly picked them preseason as the national champ. But it was LSU, and everyone else, sort of, at least when going through the preseason rankings. And then even throughout the year, it was really okay. It's LSU was in that one spot. Wake had it for, I think, a couple weeks, and they were the number one overall seed. But even still, it was the Tigers and everyone else. I think this year, it is not that at all. I know in ranking, at least putting together the preseason top 25, we debated a lot of teams at the top. I think it was 3 to 4 teams that we thought had legit arguments to be the preseason number one. So it is not at all as clear as it was last year. And I think that it's going to make for a really fun season, and especially a really fun College World Series when we get down to it, because there's no clear juggernaut where I'm like, okay, that this team is the clear favorite. I think Wake right now is the classic college baseball.
So I was just talking about this with Arm on the call up, and when I think best college rotations that I've watched over the last 10 years, let's say, it's 2014 Vandy, which is Beattie, Fulmer, Buehler, and then it was 17 Florida when they won the national title, right? Fajardo, Singer, Coar. Could Burns, Hartle, Massey fall into a trio like that? Could we be looking at three first round pitchers, three top 15 pitchers in this class?
Yeah, 100%. I think top 15 might be aggressive for all three, but I think a pair of top 15 arms certainly isn't out of the question. Top 20 is a heck of a lot more realistic for where Burns and Hartle will each be selected. But no, not at all. I think that with the talent that they've shown in the years leading up to this and what they've shown this fall, I think they absolutely have that kind of ability to go down as one of the best rotations in college baseball history, is certainly in recent memory. And I know the LSU rotation from last year, there's a little bit of carrying over to this year, but Skeens, Floyd, and Hurd, when you get down to it, Thatcher Hurd has a chance to be a first round pick this July. But no, I think that Wake rotation has a chance to be really, really special. So it's going to be appointment television to watch them on a game to game basis, I think, because those are three absolute studs.
Moving along the list, the fight for number two, I'm thinking it's probably LSU for you, but I'm really hoping it's my pick, Arkansas plus 1100 at number two. Pete, who do we got?
I have LSU, and again, like we debated a lot of teams at one, and I did as well. LSU was in there, Arkansas was in there, Florida was in there. Even TCU and Oregon State were thrown around. But no, I've got LSU. They lose to irreplaceable guys in Paul Skeens and Dylan Cruz, the number one and number two overall picks in last year's draft. That production is going to be impossible to replace. But they do return Tommy White, who will hold down the left side of the infield, and he might break the 21st century home run record of 74 this year. He's got a chance to. And they have a outstanding amount of depth behind the plate with they have sophomore Brady Neal, or they could also opt to go to Alex Milazzo and Hayden Travinsky, who both played well in Omaha. Jared Jones at first base looks the part of an NFL tight end. Like, I remember seeing him in Omaha. I was like, good Lord. Like, he is, I think I was the
Huge.
Cespedes family barbecue. When I was listening to their podcast a couple weeks ago, and they were talking about how just like huge Jared Jones was, and saying he looked more like, Travis Kelce than he did a college first baseman, but he's got tremendous raw power. And then they brought in a couple of transfers. I think one guy, I've kind of coined this, at least mentally, the Adam Tellier, like, unsung transfer portal hero. I need to shorten the award name, but the Adam Tellier, like, unsung transfer portal hero for the team is going to be Mack Bingham from Arizona. He was recruited by Jay Johnson. He knows what Coach Johnson's like. He's been a huge producer at Arizona for a while. I think the invaluable trait that he brings is experience. And you can't win without at least some experience in veteran leadership, and that's what he brings. And then he's also going to be able to produce in the lineup, I think. But I think where they also shine is in the rotation. And again, you talk about how they lose Paul Skeens and Ty Floyd, but one they return Thatcher Hurd, who again has first round type upside. He's going to be the staff ace this year, at least has the look of it. And then they brought in Luke Coleman from Alabama and Gage Jump from UCLA. Jump from UCLA, he missed all of last year, or most, if not all of last year, with an injury. But if he stays healthy and throws, and he lives kind of around the strike zone and throws competitive pitches, he is probably the best pure stuff on the staff. And I think that people around the college baseball world who were otherwise unfamiliar with him, whether he played because of him playing on the West Coast or because he hasn't really played a lot, they're going to be blown away by this kid. Like, it is thunderous stuff. It is a mid-90s fastball with ridiculous ride, a hammer breaking ball. He's electric. And so I think that, there is Skeens and Cruz are massive, massive immeasurable losses, but I think that, they return some depth. They know what it takes to get to Omaha. They know what it takes to win in Omaha. And the talent that they boast is very impressive. So I think while it is so, so hard to repeat as national champions, they're not my national championship pick. But for as hard as it is to repeat as national champs, it's really, really hard to get back to Omaha. I still think that they're able to get back to the College World Series.
One more quick thing on the rotation. Are we going to get to know Cam Johnson at all this year? Because Cam Johnson was a guy that could have gone first round. Like, crazy that he got to campus, but huge, right? Isn't he like 6'6", 250 or something?
He turned down a lot of money to go to LSU. There was heavy, heavy draft interest, as you alluded to. I think he's 6'6" or 6'7", something like that. He's got a upper 90s fast sinker, sinking fastball, 97, 99. It's got a ton of sink and run to it. And he pairs it with a budding slider. I think that this year he'll be mostly used out of the bullpen. But looking ahead, way ahead to 25, I would not be shocked to see him in the weekend rotation.
Okay.
Number three on your list, I'm just sitting here praying that it's Arkansas. I mean, come
All
on,
right.
Hank. This is our
I was
two.
gonna say it's Arkansas. And again, they were a team that I debated as my national championship pick, and rightfully so. Again, not to I think that people listening can probably sense a theme here, but their rotation is stacked. Like, Hagen Smith, Brady Tigert, and Mason Molina, they're going to be able to go toe to toe with anyone in the country. And Hagen Smith, especially, is been 97, 99 this fall, up to 100. Really good slider, budding split change. And they've got Brady Tygart, who last year he was kind of bitten a little bit by the injury bug, but he pitched well later in the season, in his first taste as a starter. And then Mason Molina, who was Texas Tech's horse last year. He's an experienced kid. He's got a four pitch mix. He's a competitive bulldog strike thrower type. Like, going to that on Sundays is that's about as good as you can get outside of maybe Michael Massey or Cade Obermueller in Iowa. But they have depth on the mound. And then offensively, they lost a lot from last year. I think they lost the majority of their regular guys, but I think Vejeva Aloy, the transfer from Sacramento State, he's going to slide in and play shortstop for him. He was outstanding last year in the WAC. He tore it up. He had a really good fall. He's someone I think that you can feel really comfortable about building a lineup around. And then they also brought in Hudson White from Texas Tech. He's another high-ish profile guy. He produced reasonably well at Tech in his first 2 years there. I think that he'll be able to hit, and they do a really good job at Arkansas in developing hitters. So I know that, you know, Coach Thompson and Coach Van Horn and that entire staff, they'll get the most out of that offense. I think Kendall Diggs is a guy to watch. He'll play right field. I caught him pretty good this summer on the Cape, and then they brought in another one, kind of that Adam Tellier guy in Ty Wilmsmeyer for Missouri. He had over 300 last year for the Tigers. He can go and get it in center field. He can run, good feel for the barrel. Like, they'll be able to roll five to six deep offensively. They've got a deep rotation. I feel very, very confident in their ability to get to Omaha. And then, you know, should they make it to the College World Series, I think they're going to be a lot of people's picks to win it.
Does every team have an Adam Tellier adjacent?
Yeah, literally.
It's so
We're
funny.
three
And
for
rolling
30.
through these three guys, like in going down it so far, yeah. In my other picks, kind of, yeah,
Quick stand.
it's weird. Yeah, kind of all of them
Okay.
So
I like it.
the reason I love Arkansas so much is you talked about the pitching. Lights out from Friday to Sunday. But they did lose, right? I think they lost six regulars. But my main question, and I'm hoping you say it's really good, is how good their transfer portal was, right? We talk about Mason Molina coming over on the mound. How about his catcher, Hudson White from Texas Tech? They also bring in Jake Wagner from Tarleton State, who put
Yeah.
up an 1100 OPS with 15 home runs. You talked about Wilsmeyer and Aloy, who was the fifth WAC freshman of the year. I didn't know that other WAC freshman of the year, Chris Sale, Reese Hoskins, Sam Long, the WAC has produced some dudes. So
Was
I'm
wait, hold
curious.
on.
Yeah.
Dale was WAC freshman of the year at Florida Gulf Coast? No, he started somewhere else, right?
That's what
It
I
can't be in
read.
the WAC.
That's what I read.
I don't know, man. Pete
Fact check
Flaherty,
me on that.
quick
My
thing.
question.
I know you're a
What?
big college hoops guy. Sorry. Do you know who the head men's basketball coach is at Tarleton State?
Oh no, that one I don't know, but they beat my BC Eagles. I think it was last year, so I should know it. But no, I don't know the head coach at Tarleton.
Billy Gillespie, the disgraced coach at Kentucky.
Oh, no way. Is it
Yeah,
really?
he's at
That's
Tarleton State.
funny.
All right, let's keep going. Peter, you
That's a
have a great
Tarleton
fact.
State. My question to you, Pete, was just where does this transfer class rank in terms of offense, right? Teams who added these type of offensive pieces in the offseason.
In trying to isolate it to offense only, I mean, that's as good of a haul as a lot of these teams have brought in. It's going to rank at or right near the top. It's Vejeva's the big guy. But again, these supplemental pieces they brought in, I've kind of got Wilmsmeyer circled as a guy who could be a real X factor for him. But Hudson White, obviously, notable guy. And then you touched on Wagner. He was a mid-major banger at Tarleton, put up crazy numbers. I'm curious to see how he does in the SEC. But offensively, the transfer haul that they brought in is it's top notch.
Jack, was I right about Chris Sale?
No, Sale was in the A Sun.
I was gonna say, yeah.
But notable WAC freshman of the year. How about Phillip Umber, who went through a perfect game? Judge, Hoskins, Nick Gonzalez, another one.
Did I just read off just a terrible list that wasn't true? That's what I
Maybe,
did.
Maybe, but that's okay. Sale, we forgive you for it.
So I forgot about Aaron Judge, but I remembered Chris Sale, who's just not on the list.
Yeah, A-son. But A-son. No, he was Florida Gulf Coast. He's a Lakeland guy. I was like, how can that be the WAC? Although I know Chicago State was in the WAC for a little bit.
Pete, number four?
Number four in no order. Like, I'm going to try and keep it, like, not overall seeds because I'm still, like, trying to figure out the last, like, team I got.
Unfortunately, on February 15th, we're holding you to it for the rest of the year. Unfortunately, it's just how capital J journalism goes.
Hey, I don't blame you. I've got Oregon State, though, and they're a team that I, in particular, Pete, I know you're a huge fan of them as well. I feel really, really confident in not only a deep run for them to June, but also as a team that can win the national championship. I was, for like our crystal ball that we do at Baseball America, where we kind of do all these preseason predictions, I was down to Oregon State and Wake as to who I was going to pick as my national champion. And I picked Wake, but I was really, really close to picking Oregon State. And obviously with them this year, it starts with Bazzana. We've talked about him at length now, but he is the total package. And I think, again, when you talk about these intangibles, he's an 80 makeup guy. Like, he's a leader in the dugout. He's a leader on the field. It's a guy you can build your team around in all facets. And then you go to the outfield, they return all three guys from last year, all experienced regulars. You have Micah McDowell, who had over 340. He's a great table setter at the top of the lineup, or you could even use him at the bottom as kind of a second leadoff hitter. But I feel like he'll lead off with Bazzana in the two hole. You can really run. And then you've got Brady Casper, who had over 300, and then sophomore outfielder Gavin Turley. He's got all the tools in the world. He got his college career got off to the best start anyone could have ever asked for. He had a home run in his first at bat. Then he kind of went through a little bit of a slump, was cool for the majority of the season, and then went berserk from May through regionals, and he ended up raising his average from like 220 to 310 by season's end. Like, he's got potential, five tool upside. He's just got to put it all together. The contact skills really need to improve, and if they're able to take a step forward, the approach takes a step forward, he could be in for a monster sophomore year. And then on the infield, they have one of, if not the best freshman to make it to campus in Trent Carraway. He is a big time bat. He's got an exciting hit power combo. He's someone I think is going to be a big time contributor for him right away. And he has freshman All-American, freshman of the year type upside. And then on the right side of the infield, you have Mason Guerra, who last year hit 326 with double digit home runs. And then, like, trying to encapsulate all of this info into, I guess, easier to understand stats, they return 71% of their home runs from last year, 73% of their doubles, and then 75 of their 89 stolen bases. And on top of that, they add in Washington State transfer Elijah Hanlon. And I think he's a more highly regarded guy in draft circles than someone like maybe Adam Tellier is, or a Mack Bingham, or Ty Wilmsmeyer, those savvy, gritty vet type players. He has top five round upside, but he had 337 last year. He was an all-star in the Cape League. And I think his play style and skill set he has is such a perfect fit for this Oregon State team. He plays fast. He'll be able to put pressure on opposing defenses with his speed. He can swing it. And then he also packs a strong glove at shortstop. He'll be their everyday shortstop. He's a quick twitch athlete. He's got a little bit of thump. And then he gives an already loaded lineup even more depth. Like, they'll be rolling like seven deep in Corvallis on a game-to-game basis. And the pitching staff is a little bit like, that's the one, if they, there's upside there. And I think that the guy headlining the rotation is Arizona transfer Aiden May. And you look at the back of the baseball card last year for May, and it was pretty unimpressive. He did also ERA. Play. Sorry.
It's like a 6 ERA, but then he led the Arizona in strikeouts.
It was like a 6.3 ERA. He notched 77 Ks in 75 innings. But again, he was playing in a non-pitcher friendly park in Arizona. Corvallis is a lot more pitcher friendly, but His fastball has been up to 97. It'll sometimes flash some run and sink. I think the shape of it really needs to improve for him to maximize his arsenal. It got hit last year. I think that hopefully this fall he was able to develop it. But he also flashed like a low 90s cutter that was more effective than his heater. So I'm curious to see how he looks. And then the slider for him is the moneymaker. It's a legit sweeper. Averaged almost 15 inches of sweep last year, and he'll throw it to both right and left-handed hitters. He's a really good arm. And then they've got Jacob Kamats, who I think will be the Sunday guy. He's got a workhorse frame. He's a strike thrower. He won't overwhelm you with stuff. But again, on a Sunday, that's a quality you got to have. And then they also have Jaron Hunter, who will round out the rotation, probably man the Saturday spot. Had a tick over a 3 ERA last year, not a huge sample size. I think he was also bitten by the injury bug. And then in the bullpen, there's a ton of weapons they've got back. Ian Lawson's back. Nelson Keljo, he's a flame-throwing lefty. He's back. AJ Lattery's back. And then I think their Adam Tellier equivalent, albeit on the pitching staff,
Four for four. We're four for
is
four. Yes.
where our 4 for 4 is Cal Poly transfer Kyle Scott. Was just really solid, kind of steady Eddie, at Cal Poly in his time there. I think that, again, he's a valuable asset for what he brings on the field and then also in the clubhouse.
Jack, I have a question for you before you ask Pete a question.
Yes.
What do you think Oregon State's odds are to win the College World Series after hearing that incredible pitch?
Low, because I bet there's a bunch of pitching concerns.
I got them at plus 3,000. They're now down to plus 2,000.
Wow.
And they're
Did
still
you
plus
move? Did you
2,000.
move the market? I feel like,
I think, yes. I don't
yeah.
know, because I don't know how they went down 1,000 points in that short amount of time.
Good on
They
you, man.
did, but it's still good value at 20 to 1. This is for all my not gambling advice folks out there.
Love it. I don't have a question, more so just an observation. Like Oregon State over the last, I don't know, since Adley got there, really, and maybe even before that. They have, under Pat Casey, probably become the class of the Pac-12, right? You look all-time Pac-12, it was USC, UCLA, now it's Oregon State. I'm just thinking about this team in the Mountain West next year, and like they are going to obliterate a mid-major conference. And I know the Mountain West is like somewhere between high major and mid-major in college baseball, but I mean, they are going to,
They might
could
go
they run the
undefeated.
table
Yeah, they
in the
might go
Mountain West
undefeated.
next year?
Not to burst anyone's bubble, they're actually going to be independent next year while they like try and figure out their next move.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, so they'll be independent. But no, I'm with you. It's them and Stanford. They're the
Oh,
class
yeah.
of the pack. And Oregon State hasn't, they haven't won it since 2018, when they
It was like
won.
6 years ago that you say they haven't won it in 6 years. I mean,
No, I know it's still recent, but I think that you also look at storylines. I think that like it's kind of all like beginning to come together a little bit. It's the last years in the Pac-12 as we know it. It's the last year where they're going to have a lot of these guys. I think it's a great potential send-off for the conference, for them to in this group to win a national championship. So I'm really, really excited to watch them this year.
got you.
The number five, my guess is it's Tennessee, but I'm really hoping it's my UCSB Gauchos. You got a number five.
Not to spoil it, I've got UCSB in there. They're not like number five for the sake of this exercise, though. It is Tennessee. They got to Omaha last year. They came into last year with very high expectations. They got off to a little bit of a slow start and then started playing their best baseball when it mattered most, which was down the stretch. They reached the College World Series, but they subsequently got bounced. I think that they have a really key group of returners. You look on the infield especially, and you have Blake Burke, who I think gets a little bit slept on. And when you talk about the most raw power in college baseball, like he's got double plus raw power, and he's got 20 plus home run upside. And I know that he didn't quite flash it last year, but he is that type of slugger. And then second baseman Chris Moore is another one. Super, super athletic kid, big league body. You see him get off the bus, you're like, whoa, like That's the definition of looking the part. And he can pick it a little bit. And then they added two key guys from the transfer portal, in Billy Amick from Clemson, who just went nuts last year for the Tigers. And then Cannon Peebles, he transferred out of NC State. He led the team in hitting last year. He had over 350 with, I think, 10 home runs and 52 RBIs or 50 RBIs on the dot. He'll be their everyday catcher. And then they also return a couple of vets in the outfield. I think one guy who could be, he's going to be a big time leader for him in the dugout. Like you look at last year, like kind of your BT Riopel type at Florida, it's Hunter Ensley. He's not the toolsiest guy. But he's going to be kind of the de facto captain of that team with Kirby Connell in the bullpen. And then a guy that I have circled is sophomore outfielder Dylan Drying. He was solid last year as a freshman. He had about 300, but he is a super strong kid. He's got a ton of bat speed. The approach is super advanced. I think that there is, again, like 12 to 15 home run up type upside, and the lineup's really, really deep. And then you look to the pitching staff. It's a little bit of a kind of a retooling. They lose Chase Dolander, obviously, from last year, and Chase Burns is, those are two really, really big holes to fill. But first team preseason All-American Drew Beam is going to be the Friday guy. He is in that next group of pitchers when we mentioned early in the show, who is kind of the second or third best pitcher in college baseball. He's in that conversation. And they've got sophomore AJ Russell, who was outstanding out of the bullpen as a freshman, pitched his way to a sub one ERA in over a 30 inning sample size. And then they bring in AJ Causey from Jacksonville State, who I think nationally he's pretty unknown. But I caught him a bunch on the Cape last year, and the previous summer, and he is a funky true sidearm guy. Like he's up to 92 from that slide. He's got an effective slider. I think that he could be a weapon for him. And then you look to the bullpen. Nate Snead is another transfer they brought in from Wichita. He's been up to 100. And then Marcus Phillips from Iowa Western. He's got all the arm talent in the world. He's got thunderous stuff. It's just going to be like honing in the command and control and taking a step forward in the pitch ability department. But they have a supremely talented team, and Coach Vitello is, for my money's worth, he's one of my personal favorite coaches in the country. I really like how he runs things at Tennessee, and so I feel really, really excited about the Vols going to 24.
Jack, don't you think it would be funny if Tennessee, after these teams that are just so unbelievably loaded and have these incredible regular seasons, they falter in regionals and then they lose Chase Burns and Chase Dolander and they ended up winning it all this year? That'd be the most college baseball thing I could imagine.
100%. I do have a follow-up on Beam, because that's a guy that, like, hey, after Burns and Dolander, chances are not many of the college baseball casuals like myself that tune into Fridays, right? I tuned into Dolander starts, and then, Beam is starting on what, a Sunday, right? He was the Sunday guy for them last year.
I think Saturday or Sunday, but yeah, he was after Dolander.
So his thing is changeup, right? Like, is he obviously pounds his own. I was just kind of looking at the numbers, and I loved the write-up that you guys did on the preseason All-Americans on Baseball America.
Thank you.
I read what, mid-90s, big kid, really good changeup. Is he like, quick ascension through the minor leagues, like could be, high floor, big league, middle of the rotation guy? Or is he that classic, really good college pitcher that pounds his own, but the stuff may not be major league ready unless there's some improvement in the minor leagues?
I think you hit the nail on the head in the middle there. I think to me he is that safer, high floor college performer who's got the stuff isn't the loudest, but it's certainly not like average stuff. You mentioned the changeup is plus, the curveball is flashing plus. It's above average right now. It's certainly effective, and then just velocity wise, the fastball, it's mid 90s up to 98. It'll flash some run and sink again. velocity really doesn't mean anything. It professionally, especially at the big league level, like if you can't command it reasonably well, and there isn't a little bit of, you know, life to it, because I mean, guys can put wood on a bullet, but it's an effective three pitch mix. He's a starter. He's got kind of that prototypical pitcher frame at 6'4", 210. I think that you can feel really confident in Beam eventually pitching his way to the major leagues. I think that he is more of a number four, number five type starter, but certainly has a chance to be an effective one.
We got three teams left. We talked about the top five extensively, and I'm so fired up. This episode is already a banger. So you talked pre-record again, how you're just, I know that you feel good right now about 6, 7, 8, but I feel like that's where it gets a little bit dicey. You seem pretty firm on the top five. How did you round out the final eight?
So to be in the spirit of honesty, I'm still trying to round it out. So I'll go with like who, it's kind of a sleeper pick for a lot of people. And they're getting a lot of recognition out West, and rightfully so. They're ranked reasonably high in some polls, and it's UC Santa Barbara. I really like them to get, it's hashtag Chomaha season again, with the Gauchos. Last year they had a really strong year. It's kind of become the norm under head coach Andrew Checkitz and his staff. They do a fantastic job. They won 35 games, but they missed the tournament for the first time since I think 2019. They lost their last four regular season games and just kind of, they sputtered down the stretch, unfortunately. But teams like Wake, Iowa, Arkansas, LSU, those are the popular names that come up, and rightfully so, when you're talking about the best rotations in college baseball. But in my eyes, one team that deserves a seat at that table is Santa Barbara. It's led by 2020. Their rotation, at least, is led by last year's Big West pitcher of the year in Matt Agere. He's also a top two round type of draft prospect. They have a pitchability lefty in Meg Gutierrez. He was 4-2 last year with about a 2.5 ERA. And then the guy that they get back, who is the X factor in that rotation for me, at least, is Ryan Gallagher. He missed all of last year again, but he was the 2022 Big West freshman pitcher of the year. He posted an 8-0 record with a 3.2 ERA. And then the guy that I haven't even talked about yet, who might have the loudest pure stuff on the staff and certainly the highest upside, is sophomore right-hander Tyler Bremner. And he is someone, at least early on, I think they plan on using him in a midweek role, which when you're trotting him out in a midweek role, that is a real testament to the depth that you have. He struck out 80 hitters across 55 innings last year. He's got a explosive fastball that's been up to 98. It averaged over 21 inches of ride last year. It's a plus heater between its velo and shape. And then he's got two quality budding secondary offerings, in a mid-80s changeup and a low 80s slider. The changeup is further along than the slider is, and then but the slider, it's a sweeper and it's got plus potential. He'll throw the changeup to both right and left-handed hitters, but the slider, it showed well this fall, so I'm excited to see the usage of that tick up, and see what he looks like. He's a Team USA type guy. And then on offense, they return six of their top seven hitters from last year, and it's kind of led by, at least in terms of a body comp, he looks exactly like Aaron Judge. Is Ivan Breddauer. He had 311 with 11 jacks last year. And then they return a whole host of returners that are going to be key pieces. I really like Xander Darby, who will hold down the Hawk corner for him. I like him both collegiately and then also as a prospect a little bit. I think he'll be a nice middle of day two, mid to late day two type of pick. And then they return a lot of depth from last year's offense, but if as a whole, that group can take a step forward in the production department, it'll go a long way, I think, towards them achieving their really high ceiling. And then you look to the bullpen. They have one of the best relievers in college baseball in Hudson Barrett. And last year, like Gallagher was in 22, he was the Big West freshman pitcher of the year. Struck out 82 guys with a sub 2 ERA. And then he's got a fastball that's been up to 94 with a legit plus changeup. So they are a team I'm really fired up about and think they're in for a deep run.
So those are my hometown UCSB Gauchos. I'm from Santa Barbara, grew up watching the Gauchos. So I had so many questions for you, but you answered basically all of them in that
Almost.
pitch. It was excellent. But my question
I'm
was,
glad.
Andrew Checkets has just been raving about Tyler Bremner. So, and he's been up to 98. So I'm just going to assume that you really like him. But I guess the one question that you kind of didn't answer, but you kind of did, but I just want you to elaborate a little bit more on it. Like Xander Darby and Aaron Parker, who I think is going to hit third. He's probably going to play some catcher and some DH. Do you think that this offense is truly good enough to compete at this level? Because we've gone through the top five, and it's like the offenses are just overwhelming. And then they have their great Friday guy, the great Saturday guy. UCSB has pitching for days, right? You talked about the bullpen, and they could go four deep, and I have confidence in all four of them. It's just the offense, and especially you're talking about from the production standpoint. Do you truly think that the offense can be this good to compete with those five? Because that's where I feel like they're just not quite there.
That's the main question. I certainly don't think that they have the firepower as the five teams we've talked about before them. But it's certainly a quality group. I think that someone I alluded to it a little bit and you did too. The guy that I think is going to take a step forward even after a productive sophomore year last year is Xander Darby. He's got a lean build, like 6'3", 210. It's a direct path to contact with a little bit of bat and hand speed. The approach is there. He's got plus bat to ball skills. He'll spray the baseball to all fields. He hit well on the Cape. I thought that he performed really well when I saw him. And he's a sound defender over at third. So I think an uptick in production is certainly in his future, en route to being like a fourth to seventh round type of draft pick. And then Aaron Parker, again, you look at the back of the baseball card and he was solid last year. I think he's another guy that you can feel pretty confident in being productive. And then Ivan Brettauer again. I think again there's not as much firepower and I guess high profile, like nationally known guys as the other five, but they certainly have the type of upside to run the Big West, them and UC Irvine. And I think that assuming they don't get sent and get like a really, really bad draw come tournament time, assuming and hoping they make it, they have the depth and firepower needed to make an Omaha run, I think.
Should we move on to the sleepers? Because I guess six is technically a sleeper, but when you're getting really towards the last two, we're looking at long shots. Who do you think are the two best long shots to make Omaha?
Okay, so my like number one sleeper, and I think a lot of people's number one sleeper, so it's like not the like craziest pick at this point. But for me, it's Northeastern, and they return a ton of talent from last year's team that won a program record 44 games, and they made a regional. I was like, it's easy now to say like I like Northeastern even last year, but I was intrigued by them last year, obviously for what they did during the regular season. I thought that they might have had a little bit of a tournament run in them, but they unfortunately got sent to Winston-Salem and Wake. So like that was just an absolute buzzsaw of a regional that they had Wake, they had Big Ten champ Maryland. It was a tough draw. I would have been curious to see what they did elsewhere, but offensively it starts with Mike Sirota. He's got a chance to be the highest draft pick in school history. Five tool type of upside. He's got one of the best approaches in this year's draft class. Again, he's got a chance to be a top 10 overall pick. And then also in the outfield with him is sophomore Cam Maldonado. He actually led the team last year in hitting. He had over 350 with 31 extra base hits and 32 stolen bases. He was the CAA Rookie of the Year. Again, pro body with tools. And then they also returned Tyler McGregor and Alex Lane, the leader in home runs and RBIs from last year. And they bring veteran experience and a veteran presence. and legit thump. And then I think on the mound is also where, similar to UCSB, maybe not of that exact caliber, just from sheer, I guess, loudness of stuff and maybe prospect status, but they have a really good and quality rotation of their own with it. Even Cabral is going to anchor it. He's their sophomore who last year had a 2.58 ERA, walked just 14 hitters and 83 and two-thirds innings pitched. And then they've got a pair of veteran strike throwers to round it out in Wyatt Scotty and Jake Gigliotti, who were both really good last year. Gigliotti split time between the rotation and the bullpen, but he was 8-0 with a 3.2 ERA. He was an all-star on the Cape this summer. Wyatt Scotty is a true senior. He had a sub-4 ERA last year, and he walked just 13 in 76 innings. And then going to the bullpen, they have a serious weapon in the back end in Dennis Colleran, and he missed all of 23 recovering from Tommy John surgery. But he's an ultra physical kid. He's got a lethal sinker slider combo. The sinker's been up to 98, at least it was this summer, with bowling ball sinking action. And then he pairs it with a really sharp sweeper that will flash plus. And then they have a bevy of other weapons that they feel confident in deploying. And it starts at the top too with head coach Mike Glavine. He is as good of a human being as he is a baseball mind, and he gets all these guys to buy in and play for each other. They're littered with vets, strike throwers, and they're the embodiment of kind of Northeast tough. And they're a super, super gritty and talented team that I think is going to make a ton of noise this spring.
Do they sell season ticket packages at Northeastern? Do you have one?
Oh, that's a great question. I should probably know the answer to it. I don't know if they do, but I might as well be a season ticket holder because, one, just to selfishly watch them as a team, I'll be there a ton. And
Right.
then obviously from a draft standpoint, getting a lot of looks at
Soroka.
Sirota and Collar and Cabral, Maldonado, those guys. But
So just quick background on you. Like, you have been obviously doing this for a good bit of time now, and you've been doing it out on the Cape, right? You've had tons of involvement with Kituit, and I'm sure we'll get deeper into that. We may do like a Cape preview or something in the middle of the summer, and you can kind of tell your origin story with Kituit. But some of the guys in recent memory that you've gotten to look at pretty much every home weekend. It'll be Sirota this year, but I'm sure you saw a ton of Sal Frelick coming out. Who are some other of those like Northeast New England guys that you've been able to get look after look after look in the spring?
yeah, Sal was super impressive. Sirota is in that similar realm as Sal was. BC, Joe Vetrano, Travis Honeyman, Cody Morissette, those three guys are really impressive. And then even this year, Harvard has a guy, Sean Mattson, who was excellent on the Cape. I knew about him going into the summer. I knew about him last spring. But he had a 0 ERA on the Cape across about 22 innings, with, for my money's worth, what was the best changeup on the Cape. So he's someone that I'm really looking forward to watching. Thomas White is another one that,
Yeah, the
who
high
was
school
kind of a
kid, Marlins.
problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, Josh Baez, who's now with the Cardinals. There's a lot of talent, in the Northeast. I think it's a really slept on region for baseball. I know the guys who play up here, they feel the same way. But it's slept on. And I think that, BC last year and Northeastern this year, I know that their rosters aren't necessarily made up totally of kids from the Northeast, but they kind of showed that, teams up here can play and play with anyone. So I definitely have a little bit of regional bias towards the Huskies.
Okay.
Mike Trout is Melville, New Jersey. That's technically the Northeast, correct?
Oh yeah, I'll count it. Yeah, Mid-Atlantic when we're talking Little League World Series, but I think geographically it is in the Northeast.
That's how I separate my regions in the country, but Little League World Series.
That's how I do it too.
How
Yeah,
else are you supposed to do it,
I'm
right? That's all I got too.
in the Great Lakes region. Yeah,
Exactly. Pete, number eight, the sleeper. Who's been calling your name? And please tell me it's the game.
oh, this isn't so much a sleeper. I've got TCU to make it back. I think last year they were a little bit ahead of schedule, and just looking at the personnel that they had, And then this is a stat that my colleague Teddy Cahill put me onto in his write-up of them. But last year, you talk about playing your best baseball at the perfect time. Between May and June, the Horned Frogs last year went a combined 21-4. They won the Big 12 tournament. They made their first College World Series appearance since 2017, and they made a run there, and they eventually got knocked out by Florida, who went to the final and eventually lost to LSU. But when you talk about them being ahead of schedule, that core of guys they made it with, they had their, I wish it was five because you could have easily said Fab Five, but their Fab Four freshmen with catcher Carson Bowen, shortstop Anthony Silva, starting pitcher Cole Klecker, and star reliever Bennett Bell. Like they did it on the backs of those kids. And they're all four of those guys are returning. Bowen and Silva will be the centerpieces of that lineup. Klecker will be a part of the rotation again, obviously. And then Bennett Bell, they're opting to use him out of the bullpen at least to start. They might as well keep him there because he is so dominant in that role, but he's got a long, slingy, long, slingy arm action, attacks from a super low three-quarter slot from the left side. It is a super, super uncomfortable bat at bat for opposing hitters, especially left-handed hitters. He's got a fastball that's been up to 95, 96 that just explodes out of that slot, and he pairs it with a really high quality, long, sweeping slider with some bite to it. And then they brought in a huge, literally, addition from the transfer portal, in Wichita State's Peyton Tolle. And Tolle will get the ball at least to start, depending on when this episode airs, but he's going to be the opening day starter for TCU. And he's a strike throwing lefty, with an effective, fastball slider combination. He struck out 97 across 85 and two thirds innings last year. He's going to attack the zone. And then they also brought in Peyton Chatagnier from Ole Miss, kind of that experienced vet type guy. He's a ball of energy and just brings an infectious play style to the dugout. And then on top of Tolle's ability on the mound, he's got a chance to be a high impact bat. He hit over 300 last year at Wichita with 13 jacks. I think his peak exit velocity last year was, I think it was something like 119. Like the impact he's able to generate is almost unlike anyone else in the country, and it's legit plus raw power. Like when he's not pitching, he'll be a big time contributor in that lineup, as a designated hitter. And then somehow back again is also Carson Bowen. When you talk about veteran leadership, you're in the same breath as like BT Raiapel. He's right in that mix. And then Ben Hampton, he's a West Virginia transfer, a little bit more of kind of a pitchability lefty, but an experienced kid who is a, I think, a nice option to turn to on Sunday. So last year, like they were ahead of schedule and they went to Omaha. At least in my mind, they were ahead of schedule, and they return a big time crop of talent from last year's squad. So I think that on in a smaller scope, when you talk about X team and everyone else in the Big 12, for me at least going into the season, it's TCU and everyone else. But I feel really confident in their ability to return to Omaha.
Can I pitch you on South Carolina instead?
Please do, because they were a team I was debating. So I'm curious to hear where your head's at on them.
So I just think that their offense is incredibly overwhelming, right? They finished third in the SEC last year in runs per game. And I think it's even better, right? Ethan Petrie hit 376 with 23 jacks as a freshman, quite possibly the best offensive player as a true sophomore in all of college baseball. They also have Gavin Casas, who returned after last year. He's obviously a big slugger. Cole Messina as well. And then they transfer in Parker Nolan from Vanderbilt. And I guess you could say, well, the pitching is a little bit up in the air, but at least they have a solid Friday and Saturday guy in Matthew Becker and Eli Jones. Like, your pitch on TCU, they feel like a more well-rounded team, but I just feel like the South Carolina offense is so good that if they get even solid contributions from this rotation, they could just hit their way, right? How many college baseball games do we see finish 10-7 and 11-6, right? That's why I feel like they can beat teams. They were a long shot for me. They were also at 30-1. TCU is probably better. Again, I'm also judging based off the odds, and TCU's odds were better than South Carolina's in terms of they were not as juicy. But I just feel like this team has so much potential if the pitching clicks.
Yeah, you hit on it perfectly at the end there. I think a lot of their upside hinges on what the pitching staff looks like and how they perform. You mentioned Jones and Becker. Those are two potentially quality guys in the rotation. And then outside of that, they're going to be looking for someone to step up. I know the guy they have pegged right now for that role is Roman Kimball. He missed all of last year recovering from Tommy John, but
is he his YouTube channel?
I watch all of his vlogs. Yeah, like he's my man. I like him a lot. Also on the field, he's got a really low launch fastball that's been up to 94, 95 with big time riding life. I've seen some video of him in bullpens this fall, and as he's come back from injury, the off speed and secondary pitches have taken a step forward. Like he's got really loud stuff in a serious arsenal, and I think that he could be someone to take a lot of people by surprise when he comes back from injury this year. And he's a legit draft prospect in his own right. He's got potentially top five, sixth round type upside, but you mentioned it, the offense is what's going to make that team go. And it's Petrie's the guy. He's got some of the most vaunted raw power of anyone in college baseball. He had over 370. Cole Messina is also a big time bat who will be their everyday catcher. Gavin Cassis, I think, hit 18 or 19 home runs. I think could have at least signed, probably could have gotten drafted should he have chosen to go on that route, but he instead chose to return to South Carolina. Like those three guys, Messina, Petrie, and Cassis, I think they hit almost 60 home runs combined. And then you talk about some of the transfers they bring in. Parker Noland is a key one from Vanderbilt. The guy I have circled is Kennedy Jones from UNC Greensboro. And last year at UNCG, Jones hit a 357 with 14 doubles, 14 home runs. He's got some thump in his bat. He'll probably play left field. I'm with you that offense is really going to be able to, they're going to one hit and two be able to keep them in most of their games. I'm just the reason why they were out of my Omaha 8, at least preseason, is I'm just a little bit iffy on the pitching staff and how that's going to shake out. But we'll know a lot more even in the first three to four weeks of the season, so not too long.
Jack, for your last team in, are you siding with Pete, who probably has a better pitch than me, or are you trying to watch dingers at South Carolina with me? Think about it.
I love it. I love the last name Casas.
And I know you love dingers.
Huge. The Rocky mascot is my favorite in all of baseball. I love Dinger. One of you is employed full-time by Baseball America and the other isn't, so I have to go with the
one. You're choosing the college baseball expert over me?
I'm a sucker for credentials, man, and I just have to go with the guy with credentials.
What are you talking about? Credentials of the Super Bowl, doesn't that count? No, Pete, I mean, what a blast, man. This is my favorite episode that we do. I mean, truthfully, MLB win totals and futures is number one. This is right now number two. Both some of the best episodes that we do here at Just on the Just Baseball Show. And it's all because of you. Go check out Pete Flaherty's writing over at Baseball America. He does the best job of anybody in the country, and we're so happy to have him on. Last question for you, Pete. Just for, you know, a lot of MLB fans follow the show, and maybe they're not really tapped into college baseball. Maybe they've watched a game here or there. But after hearing this, they're starting to feel the energy that is college baseball. Give those people an elevator pitch on why 2024 college baseball is must watch.
That's a great question. One, there is a ton of talent both at the team level. I think you heard in us walking through it. There are a ton of teams with a College World Series run, I think, in them. It was hard to nail it down to just eight. And then also from an individual and draft standpoint, there are a ton of super high level blue chip prospects who have major league all-star upside, if it all pans out for them. So whether you're a fan of a team or kind of a draft Nick and fans of players, there's stuff for everyone in the college game. And also, I not to be like, oh, old man like yells at cloud, but it is a little it's kind of the game in its purest form. The everyone plays super super hard. They're playing for each other. There's a ton of energy in the dugouts, and it's just genuinely a lot of fun to watch. So I think I'd encourage you like to pick a team or pick a handful of players that you really want to follow this year, and try and do your best to do it, because it's a blast.
It's also the best baseball environment that we have in the States outside of the WBC coming or the Caribbean Series coming. So, my last question for you, rapid fire, no explanation needed. I say best environments in college baseball.
Oh
You
boy.
give me the ballparks and I'm going to cut you off at five.
Okay. Swayze Crazies at Ole Miss.
Okay.
The Jungle at East Carolina.
Nice pick.
I'm like trying to rattle through the
LSU has to be in there.
LSU, the box is
Yeah, the
there.
box is crazy.
So that's three. I gotta like roll through these really quick.
A&M's got a great one. Mississippi
Mississippi
State.
State, the dude is there. And then
I mean, down in Florida. Those are good games
I'm
too.
at four. I'll take Southern Miss as my sleeper pick. Mid-major school, but the fans there are as passionate as they come. They're bananas and will give you hell in the outfield. So that's five. But then again, the swamp, Florida, not the swamp, but
Yeah.
Florida's unreal. A&M is a ton of fun. Texas is sick. Like, and just talking through it, like there are so many fun and rowdy environments,
Yeah.
in the college game, which you can't really say for baseball anywhere else.
Love
So
it.
we'll do a quick wraparound to end it. Rapid fire, no explanation. You're champion. I'll go first. Give me Oregon State to win it all. Jack, I'll end with Pete.
Wait, because I am drunk on the Chase
Shocker.
Burns inter-squad scrimmage video.
Wake Forest, hashtag MTFY, make them feel you.
Well, that'll do it for the 2024 college baseball preview. Again, many thanks to our guy Pete Flaherty over at Baseball America. You can find his Twitter handle in the episode description, and you could just Google Pete Flaherty Baseball America, and you'll find all of his writing. Pete, thanks again so much for coming on, and we'll do some midway point check-ins. I love that idea that Jack had about the Cape preview. That's another great one too. So we'll be seeing you again. We've been seeing you for years, and Pete, again, many thanks for coming on, my friend.
Oh, I can't thank you guys enough for having me. Just how it's your second favorite. This is my favorite one to do. So I am beyond appreciative of you guys, and I'm excited to hop back on here soon.
Definitely
You're
in
a
my
favorite
top
guest.
20, Pete. Favorite
I'll
guest.
take it. I'll appreciate it. Even others receiving votes.
Favorite guest, my friend. We'll talk to you soon, all right?
Thanks, fellas.